This is Screen Divers. In this week's episode, we are talking about 1997 Gross Point Blank. This movie is directed by George Armitage, and the screenplay is written by Tom Jankovic, Steve Pink, and John Cusack. The story is by Tom Jankovic, and this movie is produced by Susan Arnold, Donna Arkoff-Roth, Roger Bimbam, and it's starring John Cusack, Minnie Driver, Alan Arkin, Dan Aykroyd, John Cusack, his sister, Jeremy Piven, Ann Kazaria, Barbara Harris, Mitchell Ryan, Michael Cudlitz, and K. Todd Freeman. Cinematography by Jamie Anderson, edited by Brian Berdan, music by Joe Strummer, and produced by Hollywood Pictures and Caravan Pictures. This movie was distributed by Buena Vista Pictures Entertainment. It has a running time of 107 minutes. It was made for a budget of $50 million and allegedly raked $31 million on release. How are you guys?
I'm good. Slightly hungover again.
Oh my God. What's new? What's new, Matthew?
I am good. It is technically Father's Day here in Australia.
Happy Father's Day.
Did you get little presents?
I did get little presents, but Sally and I get at least one, depending whether it's Mother's Day or Father's Day, Sally and I get each other one present. And she got me the 4K release of Deer Hunter.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen Deer Hunter in such a long time.
So we've got to put it on the schedule, right?
I do also have like several other 4K releases that we need to put on the schedule, but let's spread them out as much as
mm-hmm.
possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially when they're 3 hours.
Spread them out, Ricky. Yeah. Spread them. Jesus Christ.
Puck of anus, baby. Puck of anus.
A quintessential question must be asked. Ricky, what's this movie about?
It's 1986, and imagine that, the really cool girl who has got a good crush on you has asked you to the prom, and just before you get to the prom, you go, "No, I am going to the army, and I am going to learn skills that can kill a man, and from this point forward, I will be an assassin." And then 10 years later, you have to go to your high school reunion and explain yourself.
And another question must be asked, did we all fall in love with John Cusack in this?
Yeah.
He makes me a little bit gay every time.
I had a thought during, how we speak about Hollywood.
Was it intrusive?
It got stuck in my head consistently, and it was terrible. You know how we always see or reference that there's actors which look very similar to each other?
Mm-hmm.
Bella Ramsey, John Cusack. It's going to stick in your head now for the rest of this fucking podcast.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And I got stuck, and I just couldn't.
I mean, they're being really nasty to Bella Ramsey online, dude. Everyone's pulling pictures of a potato.
That's not right. That's not right.
But the longer you look at those memes, the more she begins to resemble a potato. And I have nothing against potatoes. I mean, my diet is light on carbs at the moment.
Bella Ramsey.
I don't know. I don't see the resemblance. That's just you.
Just bring up two photos on your screens now and just have a look. Right. Honestly.
Right. Ricky, ask Ricky because I'm disagreeing with you. Ricky, please. Actually, I'll tell you what, bring up a picture of a potato, then bring up a picture of John Cusack.
No.
And why? Why don't you want to bring potatoes into this?
The thing is,
you brought the potatoes in.
I feel like with the whole memes about Bella Ramsey, they're just... You know what everyone's saying about South Park at the moment, and this will date this episode, but all the Republicans are saying about South Park that they're doing shallow jokes about some of the Republican parties and just, making a mockery of it. But that's the point. It's satire.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But that's what I feel about the Bella Ramsey memes at the moment, is that I feel like they're quite shallow jokes. They're not actually...
The reason why I'm dismissing those memes and I don't find them funny, it's because who's posting them?
Well, yeah.
Those are the people throwing around words like woke all the time, which I fucking hate. I hate that word. And I really have zero respect for the people that throw it around like that. You know what I mean? So it's that... I don't even want to say left or right wing, because those are ideologies and you need to have a brain to somehow. So it's just, you're just a fucking idiot. Not to mention the fact that she's a very young actor and she's very good.
I mean, really, really good.
Yeah. So all the best to her, all the best to Potatoes, all the best to John Cusack. I like those two things.
He resembles a potato. So. That's what we're basically saying. John Cusack is a sexy potato.
Are you saying Bella Ramsey isn't?
No, I'm just saying
that's
that,
what you're saying, man.
No, because they look the same, so they must be sexy potatoes. Both of them.
I don't know about you sexualizing potatoes now, mate. Like, I'm cooking potatoes today, and I don't want people to know what I did to them.
Potatoes. But that's why you have to shave the eyes off, so you don't get turned on too much.
Hey, these potatoes are sweet. I mean, real sweet. Sweet potatoes, lower fucking glycemic index.
Yeah, but you don't need to cut out a hole for yourself. That's what I'm saying, Gumba. Just leave the potatoes alone.
Hey, I'm not going to fuck these potatoes alone. I cut out a hole for everybody.
Oh, God.
And on that note...
We could actually end it here. It's the best shortest episode. Go watch Gross Point Blank.
Easy. This conversation is in theme with the title of this movie. It's certainly gross.
Gross. Yep.
There you
and
go.
Certainly pointed.
Oh. But I ain't shooting blanks. Boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, boom.
All right. It is important to tell our listeners right from the get-go that this episode will be messy because we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks, 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we missed each other. We're on a drink now. In fact, this episode is brought to you by Patron Tequila and Glenlivet.
I'm on water.
Water and H2O. It's brought to you by H2O.
And Mallow Laser Quest, which is a marshmallow and pineapple hazy IPA from BrewDog. There we go.
Oh, my God. It's a mouthful.
Let's
that's what she said.
Should we talk about this movie?
Yes.
And should we start with the soundtrack?
Oh, it's a great soundtrack.
It is a fucking phenomenal soundtrack.
Fucking great.
But you know what? I mean, I didn't have to do a deep dive, but it's rich. I had this soundtrack, and many people, possibly all of us, had it. But because at some point, this movie is an anomaly, man. It targeted men and women. And it's because I remember that. And I think, look, man, the other movie that I can think of this period that is akin to this because of the theme is Romy and Michelle High School Reunion. I kept thinking of that.
Same situation. Yeah. Which is terrible. Yeah.
That movie was fun, dude. And it's a lot of people's favorite movies.
I haven't seen it for a long time, but it was a fun movie.
It was a fun movie. But the soundtrack, there's a lot of stuff that was omitted from the soundtrack. So you had, there was a two-disc version of this. Let's just go through it, because we're going to play a bunch of them, but we're not. But in the original disc, you had Blister in the Sun, Violent Femmes.
And
you
also Blister 2000.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rudy Can Fail by The Clash, Mirror in the Bathroom by English Beat, Under Pressure by David Bowie and the Queen, I Can See Clearly Now by Johnny Nash, Live and Let Die by Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Two versions of it. We Care a Lot by Faith No More, Absolute Beginners by The Jam, Amigurumi on Time by The Clash, Matador by Los Fabulous Cadillacs, great track. Twice this song plays. Let My Love Open the Door by Pete Townsend. There's so much. And then on the second disc, so it was released later as well, you had Cities in Dust by Susie and the Banshees. Yep. I mean, at one point, tons of, one of my favorite dancing scenes in this, which is possibly one of the best scenes out of a high school reunion movie in any movie ever, it's Tons on Tail. But there's so much. You know, that Tons on Tail track makes me dance. My foot was gone last night while watching this.
Cluttered as a movie with all the music,
it doesn't know.
It's dropped in through sound, through the radio station. It's dropped in through radio car play. When we get a lot drop in at that point, it's a perfect point.
It is, and it's as opposed to playing a track on the back of, you know, a set piece or a sequence or whatever. It's actually playing in the background, so it kind of makes sense, but. I gotta say that it's quite saturated. Like they toss the fucking kitchen sink at it, and it works. Here it works. I mean, does the movie as a whole works? That's the question that we need to ask today. This movie is the definition of whimsical. It's very whimsical. The dialogue is off kilter, and if it wasn't for the sum of its parts, when they all count together, this would be a disaster. Like from a plot standpoint and the narrative, the way it flows, there's a lot of empty sequences in here. There's a lot of things that go nowhere.
But there's a reason. There's definitely a reason why I think that this film keeps in the forefront of my zeitgeist. I mean, you just mentioned the soundtrack, and I was thinking when I was rewatching it this week, is this the film that shaped all of my love of music from that point onwards? Because thinking about it, I would have watched this when I was 13, 14. And so even though at 10, my first three albums were Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction, Green Day's Dookie, and there was, I've forgotten the third, The Offspring Smash, which were all appropriate for the time. Yeah.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once?
Among these three, they're all like kind of first albums. Like Appetite is not a first, it's a second, but it was released before Lies.
Yeah.
All of these albums are the peak of these people's careers, in my opinion. Like if you look at Dookie and if you look at Smash, in my opinion, those two albums are still their best. So it's like they're perfect examples of peaking early. And same with Appetite. That raw energy that you have behind... But, you know...
And I think that's a whole completely different argument I would go down a hill and chat about Green Day's Nimrod. But anyway...
What? No, let's stay here. Are you putting Nimrod higher?
Are you
fishing? Of course I'm going to take the bait, dude.
There's something about Nimrod that kind of showed a little bit more of how exactly Green Day was aiming to sound like. Dookie is very, very raw and very, very teenage focused, whereas Nimrod is sort of like we've had our like alcoholic stage with Insomniac, we've had our like, we've, you know, just partying out too much, and Nimrod is sort of like, we're starting to simmer back down. But I'm, you know, I'm not going further than that. I didn't like Warning, I didn't like any of that, but this, I'm talking about Green Day here.
I'm not going to challenge you.
But
you're entitled to your opinion.
But I would say with The Offspring, as much as it's very commercial, there's something very tight about Americana. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's better than Smash. There's something very tight about it.
Tight about it.
Yeah, I said raw. These three albums are raw. Yeah?
Mm.
The Burback.
All right, I'll give you that. Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what I like.
Those raw albums, as we were just talking about, they really were a certain part of my zeitgeist. But this, you know, the fact that Monkey's Gone to Heaven's on this soundtrack. Lucky Day in Hell by the Eels is on this soundtrack. You know, so much the specials is all over this.
Stop your messing around. There's also bands or one or two that I mentioned that don't play in here, and I was kind of disappointed, unless I'm mistaken. I'm a huge Morphine fan. And I'm talking about the Opiate and the band. Morphine is, I remember like being obsessed with this band at one point. You know, when you discover a band and you just go through their entire discography. I did that with Morphine. And they are mentioned, I think, obviously there's a clear homage to the Warriors here, like many other movies. Like every time there is an MC, a radio MC, and there's a shot of their mouth. I'm sorry, but the first time that was done that I remember is from The Warriors, right?
Hi, I'm Debbie Newberry. This is WGPM-FM Gross Point, Window on Points. You heard from Massive Attack, Public Enemy, Morphine, my personal favorite, and Dwayne Eddy's twangy guitar. Good to hear Toots and the Maytals, huh? And as you know, this weekend is Points High Class of 86 reunion. So in honor of this momentous event, I'm making this an all 80s, all vinyl weekend. Stay tuned to Window on the Points, and I'll keep you posted on all this reunion-related nonsense.
She's English, right?
Who is, sorry?
Mini Driver.
Yeah, she's English. Yeah. She's very British.
And this was one of her breakout roles into Hollywood.
Yeah, it was all roughly about... same year there were three movies out at the same time, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, she's I don't know, I always liked her. I liked her as an actor. Like, she's believable, and yet again I had some issues with her here, but we'll talk about that. Yeah, I found that, okay, there's a lot of artifice in the chemistry being built between the two of them, and I felt like it worked on John Cusack, like from his side, but I felt the artifice from her performance. Do you understand what I mean? Chemistry needs to come from both parties, right? Because ultimately, this is a romantic comedy. That's what this is. But I felt like I was falling in love with fucking John Cusack in this. He's got that. Seriously, like I've always been in love with Cusack as a performance. And there's one thing that every time I talk to people that are not into film as much as we are, nobody understands me. And I hope that you guys agree with me. There is no other actor that delivers his lines like he's eating. I don't know. Is it just me, guys? Like, if you, there's a certain amount of saliva or something. I don't know what the fuck he does, but his diction and his delivery feels like he's got something in his mouth, like he's eating. Is it just me?
It's like somebody chewing gum.
But, yeah, but nobody else. Well, dude, it's so unique that it's akin to the Clooney's head wobble when he delivers his lines. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Clooney does that thing. Mm-hmm. I think he's the only one that it's akin to Spader's line delivery. you know.
I would also say that there are some aspects of Cusack that I was watching like a reel of, like, you know, history or whatever it was. And especially teenage Cusack to even 1408 Cusack, there's a slight cageness about him. And Raven.
I was going to go there next. And there is something that they have in common. You can put Cusack and you can put Cage in fucking everything, even a horrible movie, and they both have similar careers, actually, similar career arcs, and they're both great. No matter what, their performance will always stand out. It could be, even if the movie's dog shit, their performance, I can't think of a single, even you mentioned 1408, he's done a bunch of thrillers lately, Cusack, and they've got, you're right, they've got similar careers. But there's one thing about this film, man. I kept turning around to Anna. We were watching it together yesterday again. And I said, this feels like a fucking John Hughes movie. It really does. It really does. And that's not a bad thing, correct? Did you guys feel the same way about it?
Yeah.
I mean, a very adult John Hughes movie. That scene in the high school where he kills an assassin is quite brutal. it's quite a brutal stab in the chest.
It's quite amusing as well because the guy is his actual kickboxer trainer.
Dude, I've seen that guy fantastic. In 10,000 action movies. And he did his own stunts, obviously.
Yeah. Mm.
You know. Like even Anne that hates action, there's a point in which he tosses him, like John Cusack and this guy are fighting. For our listeners, who the fuck are we talking about? It looks like the typical like KGB Russian operative who's gone rogue and is, you know, you recognize his face immediately, but he looks like that type of actor. He's typecasted as fuck. Like if you've seen him before, you've seen him, you know, in those roles, in action movies.
He's one of the 51 masters. Do you know that podcast?
I want you to list the fucking 50 masters before.
Oh, here we go.
But
why aren't you prepared, man? Why don't you know about the 50 masters?
Because I read about it pretty much today. While suffering from a hangover.
What are the 51 masters? Tell us.
So there's basically 51 masters of our arts, as in martial arts. And he's one of them.
Yeah. Great. he looks like a bloated Michael York, though, right? Like a really beaten up, reconstructed version. You know, you remember Island of Dr. Monroe, the 77 version with Michael York. Imagine that cat makeup. That's what he looked like, damn. Right? That's.
It's Michael York with a fat suit.
No, in a cat like whiskered face mask.
Stop.
Without the whiskers.
Oh my god! I want a rendition of Cats now.
Oh no, you don't. When you talked about Minnie Driver, don't you think that the reason that you felt that way about her performance is because, you know, if we talk about the history of Cusack and Piven, Cusack actually went to Piven's parents' theater school, which were very
10 years, man.
10 years.
10 years.
I'm
sorry.
But I did. You know what I loved about that 10-year thing?
So, so how's the family, man?
Oh, you didn't know? Of course you don't know.
Parents
are divorced.
They got divorced?
Yeah, my dad's shacking up with this woman. She's like 20 years younger than him. She's like a biscuit older than me. It's ugly. My mom's making ceramic nightlights. It takes like the plain shells. And
how's your sister? Did you ever marry that guy, Kenny?
Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, did that ever work out?
Come on, man. He did 3 years at Joliet. They put one of those bracelets on him. Like a low jack, you know? They know where he is at all times. I think he's at Pizza Hut right now.
So let's not go there.
No.
Yeah. So you look good. You seem good.
Thank you. You may have, 10 years, man! 10! Where have you been for 10 years?
I freaked out. Joined the army. Went into business for myself. I'm a professional killer.
Oh, do you have to do postgraduate work for that, or can you jump right in? I'm curious about that.
No, it's an open market.
Open market, that's good. Wow. 10 years, man! 10 years! 10 years! 10!
10 years! I freaked out. I joined the army. I worked for the government. I went into business with myself. I'm a professional killer. That's what I did.
Okay, well, can I join up?
Yes!
Is if very much felt like two different takes just seemed together. But what I found hilarious was that his only response was, I've got to stick to the script, Piven. I've got to stick.
Hey, you know what? I know that he's involved in a bunch of scandals lately, the last fucking 10 years or whatever. I know this is a tangent now, but I think someone was talking about it, and then I made the mistake of watching one episode, and I just binged the entire show. There's a show where he plays Selfridges. Mate, have you seen it?
No, I've only seen like half an episode.
It's fantastic. That's the thing with him. Like, he's... I mean, we talked about him in...
Judgment Night.
Yeah, but I like Jeremy Piven. I mean, he was a reason to watch Entourage, dude.
Okay, so I was going to say, Minnie Driver... John Cusack, and I was pointing towards the fact that he attended the Piven Theatre Workshop, which was all about improv. And that's where he's like, you know, created a relationship with Jeremy Piven, because that's Jeremy Piven's parents that ran that.
Are you saying... Oh my God, I did not know this.
Yeah, so his Jeremy Piven's parents are theater people, and they created a workshop that was mainly about improvisation. And this is where, this is the reason that this script was only written about 70% done by the time they started shooting, because this is what John Cusack wanted. He wanted actors like Alan Arkin and like Dan Aykroyd to turn up on set and go
in this as usual.
Yeah, but this is, he knew that they were going to come and say, I want to change this scene up. I want to add these lines and stuff. And John was like, yes, please, just do it.
And there's actually, thank God for that.
He actually said on an interview about 4 years ago that a lot of people on his first scene with Alan Arkin kind of advised him, like, Alan wants to change all the lines in the scene. And he was the only one not freaking out, because he was like, that's what I want Alan Arkin to do. I want him to make it funnier. Yeah. So, but that was the point.
And it's that funny, again, someone like Alan Arkin, for example, has that quality, like Bill Murray, that you can just be. Yeah. And it's funny. You know what I mean? Like, although, isn't he Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't he meant to be Jewish in this as well?
He's playing Dr. Oatman. So
he does. European, am I mistaken, or he picks up something that resembles a rosary at one point?
I'm not sure what he picks up to like.
He
focus.
Picks up something because he's stressed out because he doesn't want to.
But I
he
do
doesn't
love.
Fucking
I do love like
guilt,
basically.
Yeah, but I do love the relationship they created where he goes. Great. That's he goes great, something right. along the lines of, because, you know, I know where you live. And he goes, why would you say that? Why would you?
But it's so fucking funny, man. It's so funny.
Shouldn't you be taking notes or something?
I'm not taking notes, Martin, because I'm not your doctor.
Please don't start with that stuff again.
Martin, I'm emotionally involved with you.
How are you emotionally involved with me?
I'm afraid of you.
You're afraid of me.
And that constitutes an emotional involvement, and it would be unethical for me to work with you under those circumstances.
Don't you think maybe you're just upset because I told you what I do for a living, and you got upset, and you're letting it interfere with our dynamic?
Whoa. Martin, you didn't tell me what you did for a living.
Yes, I did.
You didn't tell me what you did for a living for four sessions. Then you told me, and I said, I don't want to work with you. And yet you come back every week at the same time. That's a difficulty for me. On top of that, if you've committed a crime or if you're thinking about committing a crime, I have to tell the authorities.
I know the law, okay? But I don't want to be withholding. I'm very serious about this process. And I know where you live.
Oh, now see, that wasn't a nice thing to say. That wasn't designed to make me feel good.
Have you seen the show with him and Michael Douglas? Michael Douglas is...
I watched a couple of episodes. Yeah,
what's it called? Ricky, come on, man. Is it all about a theater, like a drama teacher?
Yeah.
Okay, or like a theater?
No,
like
I haven't.
Someone teaches an acting the something method.
Kominsky
method.
Yeah.
Something
if
like
I'm
that.
Not mistaken, he fucking died between seasons.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Mm. Yes. Yeah, and they put it in the show. They did put it in the show. Dude, you're a theater freak. Ricky, I'm talking to you. Mm. Steve, it's fantastic. What's it called, the show?
The Kominsky Method.
Kominsky Method. It's really good. It's really, it reminded me, not just because Michael Douglas is in it, but it reminded me of the Wonder Boys.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of genuine, even if some of the themes touched in this are quite dark, it's still kind of, it's a very amicable show. You know, when something's good-natured, like Schitt's Creek, these are shows that are good-natured. You know what I mean? That you feel good after watching them.
It's also a Chuck Lorre series. Chuck Lorre,
I have tons of respect for that guy. Yeah. Like, regardless of, for our listeners that are not familiar, of course you're familiar with it, Two and a Half Men, Big Bang Theory, he cut his teeth on Roseanne. These are very formulaic shows. Yeah, but the guy can fucking write. And if you don't believe me, be a little bit more attentive next time. If you've got on a streaming service or whatever, streaming services have this bad habit of ending an episode before the credits. At the end of every episode of Two and a Half Men, at the end of every episode of The Big Bang Theory, and yes, very formulaic shit, there are vanity cards. Now, if you don't know what a vanity card is, it's that little bit right before it fades to black. So in the middle of the credits, you would get this, and it's really introspective, dark shit that is really, really funny. So I have a lot of respect for him just on those bases. And it will kind of be like a... is it an epilogue?
Epilogue is
what's at the end, right? It's like an epilogue of the episode, and there will be some, like a seed of truth that came from within as a writer. And that's why that episode touched a particular topic. Usually there's some affinity with whatever the episode was about, right? He's a very good writer.
Yeah.
He's a very good writer. Dude, he was the writer of something like that it's easy to put down because of the cast and, again, the formulaic nature of it all. But I watched it without it, and it was just because Sam Elliott was in it. The Ranch on Netflix. His performance alone is a reason to watch the show. And... also, a reason to watch the show is the fact that Danny Masterson got cut out of the show.
Mate, how did we get into that? No, we look cul-de-sacking ourselves.
So what? So what? We're talking about Chuck Lorre. So the guy's still working. He's a fucking titan in the industry. And I can still see value behind something formulaic. If you're having your dinner, regardless of you being alone or not, maybe you had a hard day. Sometimes it's good to have 22 to 24 minutes. Just switch your brain off. This is what these shows are made for, I think. Mm.
So going back to the fourth time I've tried to say this point, Mini Driver is the only person that doesn't quite have those chops around improvisation. Everybody else on the cast list, every single person has had some sort of improvisation training. I don't believe Mini Driver had.
True.
I was thinking, right, I'm going on a tangent now. I was thinking of how you make fake Italian. So if you wanted to say, and I was thinking, do you change the A's? So if you say, Bultardi, or whatever.
I'll tell you the trick.
Right, is that shortening the A? But then I came up with something else.
I'm gonna teach you three rules. The three Italian rules.
Treo.
You ready? Okay. Yes. So you always need to move your hands. And when you throw your hands, throw them forward and back within a space of 20 centimeters. Do it now.
Yeah, I've got
that. In English, while you're talking English.
I already have that.
That's
bullshit.
It. Okay, that's your baseline, right? For your hand movement.
Gotcha.
Now, then you can include some gyration, but those are more advanced techniques. So we'll get to those later. Now, yes, you see, Steve spends enough time in this house. You've been away for a bit, so I can't blame you. Now, the other thing is you need to roll your R's. Some people can do it.
Roll your R's.
No, start with this. You can fucking do it. So there you go. Yeah. Instant passport right there. Now, just go to any embassy and go, passport.
Passporto. But then you have to add in extra vowels all over the show.
We'll get into it. And the third thing is, in Latin languages, all the vowels are open. So, repeat after me. A.
A.
E.
E.
I.
I.
O.
O.
U.
U.
A, E, I, O, U.
A, E, I, O, U.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm so proud of you.
I'm in the brigade.
Yes. Now, all you need to do is to open up your vowels when you talk, roll your R's, and move your hands. That's it. That's
as
it.
The series began.
Wait. Another thing essential, a huge amount of guilt. Huge. I'm talking about Catholic.
I did just watch Conclave, so I do understand the guilt. The Halio has just a paroled from a prison.
Paisano.
Paisano.
Mio Paisano, Indiano.
Quick, Mario, bring in your Luigi.
It's me. We're getting cancelled in several countries.
Says the Italian.
So what's up?
Yeah.
So this movie.
Let's get back to the movie.
All
right, let's go back to the show.
Okay. We were talking about Mini Driver.
Again.
We talked about Mini Driver.
Yeah, we're done.
But you know, we're talking about Mini Driver, but you know who else should be praised here? John Cusack.
I think all the Cusacks should be praised in this.
Yeah, Amy Cusack, she's the friend that joins at the table, right? And she's really drunk. She's fucking funny. I'm trying to remember her from other stuff, but I couldn't come up with anything. But I've seen her before.
Sorry, do you mean Anne Cusack who's playing Amy?
Anne Cusack. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But Bill Cusack as well, like there's, it's an entire family. I looked at the guys got acting credits as well, so there's a bunch of them.
She is prolific, and there is something that we've all watched. I believe maybe I'm talking out of school. 16
Candles? Is that what you're talking
about? No, I was going to say she was in Better Call Saul. She was the receptionist, I think, of one of the firms that. Saul keeps going to try and get more like representation out of them, and then ends up suing them through the old people's home.
I mean, the marginal cast here, no offense by calling them marginal, but there's a lot of little performances by a lot of character actors in here. Did you guys pick up on some of the pop culture references in the background here?
I mean, I didn't do a deep dive into the backgrounds. I saw some stuff, but a classic, which is a Dress to Kill, for the actual party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you notice the Doom 2 coin up machine?
Yeah. And, What about the Pulp Fiction reference?
Fiction cutout. Yeah. I was going to go there next.
Do you know that Tarantino had to go on set and approve that?
You're
really?
Joking.
No, honestly. He went on set during filming and approved that being used and shot the shit.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Did you see Jenna Elfman?
Yes, I did. Yeah. She's the one with the neck brace.
Yeah. Which is hilarious because Joan Cusack was the one with the neck brace in 16 Candles.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of replicating that character. On top of that, there was somebody from The Walking Dead. Did you catch that one?
Michael
Cutlets. The guy that we talked about that Cutlets, I thought was the guy in Hot Shots.
Yeah.
So it is him this time, right?
Yeah, it is him this time.
Yeah.
Mate.
Bob. And the used car salesman.
He's got some of the best one-liners in this. I wrote them down last night.
Do you want to take some
coke? Yeah. Well, that was at the end of every sentence, pretty much. Every exchange ended with, "You want to do some coke?" I found myself saying yes last night. I was like, you know what? Yeah, man. Let's go. But... wait a second. I've got from him, It's the Poem.
Oh, the poem's so good. I love the poem.
Just go to the end.
when I feel quiet, when I feel blue, and he gets interrupted, and then he skips right to the end of the poem and goes, for a while, for a while. There's a pause, and then he goes, "Want to do some blow?" There's, who's the guy that plays Mini Driver's father in this?
Michael,
it reminded me of Jack Palance, but it's not Jack Palance. Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
Mitchell Ryan.
Yeah.
There you go, that guy. There's a bit when he's been in a ton of TV shows from the 80s and the 90s for sure. Like, it looks familiar, but I think he's in
Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers.
That's which one's that? Doctors. The fourth one?
Oh my God, I can't remember. One from 95.
Mm. Yeah. And he's also the main bad guy in Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
He's the general.
Oh my God. Yeah. He is. Yes, he is. There's a lot of repetition in this movie as well that works for the comedy. Like we mentioned earlier, like Tiny Ears, man, that one, it's repeated several times and it works. But there's another, and it's an entire sentence that is being repeated. And it's John Cusack saying, you know, I'm a guy in love with your daughter, and I have a newfound respect for life. And then it moves to the car with Dan Aykroyd in it. And he goes, that guy's in love with his daughter, and he has a newfound respect for life, and it works. Also, credit to Dan Aykroyd, no other actor. I don't think that there's, not even in action movies, not even like a veteran of action, has done dropping a gun after a clip is empty and discarding the weapon as good as Dan Aykroyd does in this. He just drops the guns and just goes for another. It's just fucking great. Yeah. And also, Dan Aykroyd's skill in selling bullshit in this is just... Perfect. I mean, he does it in Ghostbusters. You know, it doesn't matter what he's talking about. He's selling it to you, and he does it here. He does it here. Not to mention the fact that we weren't planning to have popcorn last night, but the first time he had this, popcorn. Annie goes, popcorn? And she went to make some popcorn.
I have to say, I think this is Dan Aykroyd's first time as a villain.
Oh.
I don't know, dude.
In the great outdoors,
he plays a douchebag and it's kind of villainous.
But he's not the villain.
But he kind of is, man, because he's, you know, you remember The Great Outdoors with John Candy?
He is annoying.
Roman. He plays Roman in that. That's his name.
But I don't see him as a villain in it, if you know what I mean.
I'm trying to think now.
Well, maybe I'm just like, going through it. Spies Like Us?
He's no. They're pseudo really, spooks or something. They're not really villains. They're spies. Yeah. I mean, I think you're right.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
he's great. Do you know that apparently there's an official sequel to this movie?
Yeah, yes. Well, not unofficial, official, War Inc. Yeah. So same setup, same characters, even his sister playing the same role. Everything.
He plays the same
role. I'm a little bit more disillusioned. So it's obviously that they broke up.
And I want to watch that now. That was 2007, 2008. Yeah. War Incorporated? War Inc.?
War Inc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, yesterday in the group, for our listeners, please, we'll put it on the show notes. We'll put it as a screenshot in the Facebook page. So go to our Facebook page, and if you haven't done it yet, give us a like and a follow. If you show some appreciation for the show, we will continue to make some episodes, and we will be right in your ears for a long, long time.
Ew.
Now, with that being said... What am I talking about? Yesterday, I sent you a screenshot of... I'm spamming you with memes, so you're not even looking at the stuff that is relevant to the show anymore. That's really bad, man.
I had to scroll up about 50 memes.
This is unbelievable. All right, I'm trying to keep you relevant, assholes. Wait a second.
Watching a mate of mine play his track Caligula, I'm thinking of Ricky. Oh, thank you, Steve.
Yeah,
Actually, you're right. I am spamming too much.
I have to go back 40 memes.
I can't even fucking Friday. What was it?
Sebastian Stan.
You know what? Maybe I didn't send it to you guys.
Maybe you're thinking of sending it to us.
No, I didn't send it because I wanted it to be like a highlight of this episode. But let me find the thing. Okay,
it's Giorgio Armani.
No, forget it. Now, this is 1997. This movie was released in 1997. You could argue that this is the inception. Not the inception, but it's on the eve of the internet being available at speeds that resemble today, yeah, almost. Not really, but ADSL was, you know, like a new thing back then. So speeds were getting up there. 1997, there was a little viral experiment. Where am I going with this? As we're watching the movie, I was looking at, there's a sequence where you can see a decal on the glass of their office, the firm's office, okay? Because this is like, you call these people. What is the company called? The company is called, I'm stalling, the Pacific Trident Global Shipping Company.
Yeah.
Now, if you go online right now, do it. Your phone, Steve, you don't have your phone, but you can do it on your browser. Just type in Pacific Trident Global Shipping.
Okay.
Listeners, do it as well. Go on your browser and type in Pacific Trident Global Shipping. The first or second hit you get, it's a website that is still live, and I want Ricky to read out loud and describe what he sees.
Okay, so I'm looking at the second one that is not trusted. So the third one, right? Okay, let's have a look. Oh, wait. Hold on. Why is mine not working? Oh, my goodness. Oh, it's got a... Oh, wait. No, it's the first one. There we go. It's the first one. And it says established 1992, Grosse Pointe, Michigan, USA. Pacific Trident Global Shipping was established in 1992 to service all your special needs. No company in the world provides services quite like us. We have a global reach with the ability to get to any place at any time. In fact, you'll hardly know we're there until we show up at your door. We work behind the scenes to get the job done, and we do it right the first time. We are an independent and privately owned company. We are not tied down by unions, governments, or corporations. We do it ourselves, and we work alone.
Mate, this is still live. So it's one of the early inceptions of viral marketing.
There's a hidden link in here somewhere.
Is there?
There's another.
Yeah.
I've got the home link. Okay.
So, and then in bottom left underneath the text is a full stop, I think it is, as a hidden element.
Okay, hold on.
I'm trying to get it open.
Oh, wait, I see it. Oh, hold on. I don't think it's functional anymore.
No,
but
it's not.
But the website's still up and running. Like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
That's almost 30
years ago. But I don't think
that
full stop is functional anymore.
No.
No, well. Do we have history on it? Oh, I'm going to put it in the Wayback Machine. I'm going to put it in the Wayback Machine and see what happens.
What is the Wayback Machine?
You don't know? If you ever wanted to go back to your old MySpace page, you can go back.
Why
to
the
it.
Fuck would I do that? So much cringe. Why would I go back there?
Because you want to hear that track, you know, that track that you associated like a long time ago.
What are you talking about?
Oh, like, you know, on MySpace, you could associate tracks to your profile.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No, I've not really got anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got one snapshot in 2013. So it probably isn't there anymore.
You know what my song was?
What was your song?
Can't touch this.
Do, 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 do. Do, do.
Jesus
Bring
Christ,
it down.
I can't believe I just said that publicly.
Oh, you've said it before.
Yeah, I know, but this is bad. This is bad.
Anyway. Okay.
That's perfect.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
Let me talk about two actors. One of them, we all know, Hank Azaria. Hank Azaria, my apologies. He does a fantastic job. And he doesn't sound like any of his Simpsons characters, so that's a positive. But yeah. K. Todd Freeman.
Where do we know that guy from?
Where do I know K. Todd Freeman from? I'll tell you one thing. Umber and I And I haven't told Umba this. Maybe I did. I have finally got to the end of the rehearsal.
Okay. So
you did? The first season or the second one?
Both. And now okay. I'm watching Nathan for Us. Nathan for you. My apologies.
I have been barking up this tree for many, many years, and you finally have done it. The man is a genius.
I don't want to I feel like that's for another time. But let me tell you about the rehearsal, the very first episode of series one, where he invites somebody around who has told a lie to his friends. Core. He is the fake Core.
And it's this dude? It's this actor?
This actor is the fake Core. It's the one that turns around to him and says, you know, when he has that moment where he goes, let me just tell you that I've kind of lied to you and it's a fake, and I fed you all the answers to the quiz.
Yeah.
And he said, and the guy goes, you're a horrible, horrible man. This is really fucked up what you've done. That's him.
Oh, that's fucking amazing. Well done. What's his name again?
K. Todd Freeman, yeah.
So in this movie, they are spooks, right?
Yeah.
So they're
feds.
They're feds, but there's an entire conversation between Hank Azaria and the guy played by the actor you're talking about now, in which they're challenging each other. And I'm glad that there was the Pulp Fiction fucking poster in the Mega Mart or whatever, Multi Mart or whatever it was called, because it's a conversation that's very akin to what the exchange between Vincent and Jules in Pulp Fiction. But they're challenging each other's morality. And one of them goes, you know, are we the bad guys or we are the bad guys? But until we, you know, we're the bad guys, but if we kill another bad guy, then we're the good guys. And that entire conversation, that's a spook, right? That's technically, but both of them seem to kind of revel into killing people. They're just looking for that reason. That's a loophole, right? They need to do that. So they're like bound by these rules.
I love the way when they break into the house, both of them start shooting fire, but both of them have their eyes closed.
But it's all comes down to that one line that Marty says, which is, you know, I'm not a psychopath. They kill people for fun. I do it for money.
There's the entire appealing to her father and her, well, as they get into the house in the third act of this movie, in which he's basically, you know, it's a plea. He's basically explaining himself throughout a shootout. You know, it's a crazy juxtaposition. Like, there's no other movie that has something like this in it. So that's why I said this movie is kind of, if it was made today, it would be possibly a victim of being a tonal disaster. Because there's it shifts gears. Like you said, that entire sequence with the blood and everything in the high school, I mean, they put the fucking guy into an incinerator. You know what I mean? Like, there's blood, there's violence, but there's the shift in tones somehow is aided by this whimsical nature, the movie. And I think even if she's not on screen for a long time, believe it or not, the originator of all of this, of this tone in this movie, is John Cusack. It's his sister. Yeah. It's just because even the shots where she's in, the camera's askew, have you noticed? So you get that extra quirkiness. There's shots of the office, and whenever she's, the camera is at an angle all of a sudden. So you get this, it's not even a wide angle lens. So it achieves quirky because of her delivery. And it's just tilt the camera a little bit. And all of a sudden it seems like there's a lot of sequences in this that feel like dream sequences. Like even like the logic in this movie goes out the fucking window. There's a couple of times he's a hitman, right? And when he goes back home, when he gets to Gross Point, he finds out that his family home is not there anymore. It's been turned into a little convenience store by a chain, which is even more irritating for some reason. Yeah. And we do get this kind of juxtaposition again in, which is, I didn't think about it until now, in No Country for Old Men. There's an entire exchange between, what's his name? The guy that plays the hitman. This really fucking iconic figure in No Country for Old Men. Javier Bardem plays.
There we go.
Yeah. He goes his entire coin toss sequence. It's another, like, if I have to think about another movie where there's an exchange between a shopkeep at a convenience store and that it's kind of an extended sequence, that it doesn't belong in the movie, it doesn't service the film. There's the entire exchange between him and like, between John, what's his name in this? Martin.
Martin Q. Blank.
Martin Blank. And the...
Are we talking about the doctor, the shopkeep? The shopkeep. God, what is his name?
Can I hear sirens in the background?
Marty.
Is that you, Steve?
Yeah.
Are they coming for you? They found the hard drives?
Which one?
Which one, yeah.
Ultimate Carl. So his name's Carl.
Ultimate Carl. Is that the name of the chain?
Yeah, it's Ultimate. Yeah, this movie shouldn't be as good as it should be in terms of the amount of work that has gone into the production of it. So, for example, the explosion of the Ultimate is amazing. It's probably one of the... It's so good. It's huge.
Do you think it was a model? Probably a model, right?
No, I think they blew up a shop front. Like, I think it was a fake shop, and they just blew it up.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be about right, because it does look a bit off how they jump onto the grass afterwards and the other bits. And when you look at, when he's looking at the shop front, it looks kind of superimposed or not quite real. Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just literally like the front that they've just built up, yeah.
But for all you know, this could be an origin story for John Wick before they killed his dog as well. Like, maybe it was the outfit. I don't know what it was. But, man, when we said earlier that this could have been a tonal disaster, not total, but tonal disaster when it comes down to tone, when he dispatches the Russian, I assume that it's Russian or whatever, the hitman that comes to the high school, man, there's a shift in gears there. He kills the guy with a pen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like... And then the comedy hits again afterwards, but the entire fight is very John Wick. Yeah. Very John Wick.
Yeah.
You know.
It's a very American jump cut, though. One of the kind of things that I dislike about that kind of stuff.
But it was another time, you see.
It was another time.
It was.
Yeah.
And there's the one thing that I'm not sure about this film is that did it all work in the editing? One of the things that they said was that every single shot was three different shots. So the first one stuck to the script, the next one was a mildly understated shot, and then a completely over-the-top shot. So the one scene that doesn't work for me, and I don't know why, is when he's over at Minnie Driver's house, and they start being like silly teenagers again, and she goes, do the aeroplane. And, you know, and I'm just sort of like, what is this? Like, and the funny thing is, when I first originally watched this film, I probably watched it kind of on repeat every so often, like once every couple of weeks. Because, like, recorded it, whatever, off Sky TV at the time.
Mm.
And it was one of my, like, comfort films. You know, it was like my personal rom-com or whatever. And then it got replaced by High Fidelity 3 years later. You know, it was just... one of those films that is very comforting, but that scene even then didn't make sense to me. Like, it was that was a tonal shift, but it kind of works because, again, as we said, you love John Cusack in this film.
You love John Cusack in this, yeah.
So one of the things that they actually stated is that there's so many different cuts of this movie, and they've never produced them or reproduced those cuts or those extra segments in any of the DVDs or Blu-ray releases. But there's pretty much another movie sitting out there.
Was it another movie with him called Better Off Dead?
Yes, I love Better Off Dead so much.
I'm going to have to do that at some point.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, like, he was like the, again, well, we probably talking about this before the recording, we were talking about yin and yang. I see him as the opposite side of that coin, where the other side is Charlie Sheen. Yeah. And on one side, you have John Cusack. So it's... as in bad boy, good boy. You know, he's the good guy, but the good guy gets the girl kind of thing. There's nobody else that maybe Broderick tried to go there, but it's not as good as Cusack.
No.
Cusack does it really well. That's if you had to typecast him, that's what he does. I think.
Because there's a lot of people who talk now, including myself, about how High Fidelity is actually quite a problematic movie. Like, the film itself, the plot, even the book is quite problematic. And I keep saying to them, to people who always raise this question with me, like, oh, look how, you know, how he sees his relationships and how a bit of a gross male presence he is from the start to the end of the film. I say to them, there's that scene where he turns around to one of his previous girlfriends and she calls him out on it. And then afterwards he goes, oh yeah, I broke up with her. And that, for me, that sums up the film, which is, even though he thinks he has such an autobiographical mindset around his previous life, he doesn't. There's a few little bits going here. No,
absolutely.
And that's what I think.
I think it's also very self-defeating, very self-aware kind of character towards the end. Like, it's not, it's not someone to aspire to. It's quite pitiful.
But that's what's so good about it. It's so human, which is what I think John Cusack is amazing at choosing. Every time he chooses a film, he chooses a film where it's a very human character.
Heavily flawed.
Yeah. And this is, in this one,
Con Air.
Yeah, even Con Air. He is a very flawed person in Con Air. But I do like the line of, I only trust two people. The genius line. Anyway, but in this film,
but even the wanky kind of, dude, the entire sequence between him and Aykroyd in the diner,
so good.
But even at the beginning, when they approach each other, and both of them have their hands inside their jacket, going, I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. But that scene wouldn't have worked without Dan Aykroyd.
No,
like it's. He's amazing in this. It and it doesn't get that much screen time. It's very little. But it's just the entire thing about the table, how they mistrust each other, and it's like a fuck you, fuck you, fuck you line. Also, another highlight here is the exchange between Martin and the English teacher at the beginning of the scene.
Yeah, that's great.
You've still got that Mary Tyler Moore thing going on.
That's great. Both of them are being extremely sarcastic to each other. That's great. Yeah.
You know who else is probably being extremely sarcastic about this film?
Hello, Mrs. Bader. How are you,
Mrs. Bader? So, how are you today?
I'm that okay.
This movie would have worked with you as well, Mrs. Bader.
Probably would. So at this point, I think that we're kind of very positive about this film. So we're going to look at two one-star reviews. The first one says, overhyped and underplot. I've played video games with better plots than this film. The writing is insultingly dumb and needlessly violent. John Cusack gives a better performance than his sister, and Minnie Driver as an love interest is competent as usual, but otherwise this film is unwatchable for sheer idiocy of events. Thank you so much, Jeff Chan. October 15th, 2005, and my final review is. I think he's trying to pretend to be. No, it's a she. She's trying to pretend to be asleep. Can you say boring? This movie took an hour and a half of my young life that I will never get back. The only good and funny thing about this movie is Joan Cusack. Thank you, Ivana 7, July 3rd, 1999.
Ivana 7, what is it? Ivana 7?
Ivana 7.
You're making your Pope, your millennial Pope, very sad. This is fucking... No, it's not a millennial Pope. What is it? What happened to the saint? What's going on?
He's been made a saint.
No. A teenager who passed is the first millennial to be a saint.
Yeah, well, there you go. That guy died for you, Ivana 7. What the fuck? Get your shit together.
Might be a she. I can't remember. I'll have to reread the post.
Anyway.
Thank you, James Spader.
Yes. Steve, anything about the guns in this? Because I've seen some weird props and weird shit in this. It's all fake, I think.
Man. So there's actually quite a lot of this stuff is correct. So you've got John Cusack using the Glock 17s. Then when we're looking at the bodyguards at the beginning of the movie, they're using Glock 19s. But then you got Dan Aykroyd with the amazing Colt Mustang, which is the two guns that he's using. So then you've got a couple of Desert Eagles floating around. But the gun that Minnie Driver uses in the bathroom, that's a Ruger KP-94. See, I came with everything this week.
Oh, you definitely came. I did, yeah. I heard you now.
It's
that.
A Ruger!
Ruger!
I don't know why I went brother.
I just want to point out that there's a very... Dan Aykroyd favors the silver guns, where Cusack's going for the black ones, which is quite interesting because it shows that they're two different or two polar opposites. But the ones which are really quite nice were the Smith & Wesson Model 629s, which are the ones used at the beginning of the movie when he kills the guy on the floor. With bodyguards, that's a nice looking gun.
You like those guns?
It's a nice looking gun. That's what I'm
What's
saying.
It called again?
It's a Smith & Wesson Model 629 Performance Center.
69.
I mean, actually, but that's revolvers. That's a really interesting point that we haven't talked about, which is, you know, you talked about the fact that Dan Aykroyd always normally has a silver gun. The fact that John Cusack, which again might be me like having a little bit of a male crush still on him, I think he started my love of black ties on a black shirt. Love it.
Yeah, he does that well. Yeah, he does that well. Yeah. Now I think it's time for ratings.
It's still a good movie. It's still funny. There are some parts of this which fall flat, but given by the fact that Dan Aykroyd is perfect in it, every single scene he's in is funny, and that for me is great. I love it's a black humorous kind of movie. We're dealing with hitmen. Nobody goes to their 10th anniversary of their thing, and it's usually the idea that they bullshit about what they do, and he's actually telling people, yeah, I'm a professional killer. Every single time he has that conversation, he turns around and says, yeah, I'm a professional killer, I'm an assassin, or whatever. And everybody just kind of laughs it off until they don't.
Yeah.
And I like this movie. It's 7 on my ratings, and this is 7 Smith & Wesson Model 629 Performance Centers.
Nice.
Yes.
Ricky.
With a telescopic scope.
I have a fond, great history with this film. As I said earlier, it was a film that I watched repeatedly over and over again. Looking at the soundtrack, looking at what John Cusack wears, looking at a lot of things about this film, it has shaped a lot of my adulthood. I think that watching it again was just as fabulous as when I was a kid, so there's a lot of nostalgia attached to it. But I also see quite a few of the problematic areas in this film. You know, there's certain cohesions between the characters that doesn't quite work looking at it again, but at the same time, it's a wonderful ride. It's great enjoyment. However, this time, I am going to be true to myself and say, yep, I'll watch it again, but I'm not going to give it a high, high rating, so I'm going to give it a 6.9 Semtex explosives in a microwave ready to take down a convenience store.
That's not nice. Bad. That's not bad. So yeah, this was it was a walk down memory lane. You know, it just feels that way. I remember when this came out, it was I don't want to say all the rage, but I'm going to say all the rage. Like, there was an edge to it, and it lasted for a long time. And I think it's that feeling that legacy will be carried on for my generation will stay. It will stay because it's a high school reunion. It was an element of nostalgia embedded in the film when it came out. And I think that's like a sixth gear for any movie that has that setting, because it's looking back. So I'm not saying that it's But it's kind of it's a good plot device to put in a movie, because, and not only that, you do have the nostalgic element of the soundtrack here, which will carry on for two generations in this. So it does have, you know, this movie carries on a legacy of some kind. It's there's only a few. If you talk about Gross Point Blank with anyone that is a Gen X or even an elder millennial, they will remember this movie, and fondly as well. We revisited this movie, and it's still fun. There are flaws. Yeah, there's a lot of parts that kind of feel like filler, and also I highlighted what I definitely am convinced of now, which is the chemistry in it is palpable, but it's one-sided. It only comes from Cusack for some reason, and this is not a detractor when it comes down to, you know, I'm not judging Mini Driver's performance, but it felt like something was lacking from our side. I don't know what it was. That's the way I perceived it. I gave this movie a 7, and it's a 7. Want to do some blow? And on that note, this was Umba.
This was Steve.
And this is Ricky. Hast du etwas Zeit für mich? Singe ich ein.